When Howard Woods awoke on what would become the most fated day of his life, he squinted his eyes at the bedside clock. Still only 3 a.m. He had been dreaming again. He could feel the moist sweat on the sheet beneath his stomach, the damp of his own pajama top. He turned over onto his back, even though this meant he would snore off and on until morning, with Ellen poking at his ribs to quiet him. But if Ellen were deep into her own sleep, she wouldn't hear. Howard stretched an arm over to touch her, to assess the situation, but Ellen's side of the bed was empty. This was nothing unusual, since Ellen Woods had always admitted to being a night person. Many times over the years, Howard would wake to find her standing at the window, silver in moonlight, silent. Other times, he'd hear her prowling about in the rooms of the house, like some kind of midnight burglar. "My night owl," Howard Woods called Ellen. Even when the two were still teaching at Bixley Community College, Ellen history and Howard literature, even then Ellen was often up at night, restless. "Come back to bed," Howard would say to her, and then with sleep pulling him down, with the alarm clock waiting to maliciously uncoil, he would drift back to his own dreams, knowing he could snore freely if the urge should come upon him. Yet at breakfast, while he ate his oatmeal and drank his coffee and read a swatch of the morning paper, Ellen was the one who had enough energy to ransack the house for Howard's quarterly tests, the ones he had finished correcting the night before. And Ellen was the one to gather up the dishes and leave them in the sink so that she could find them soaking after school instead of clogged with egg yolk and jelly. Ellen was the one who said, "It's there, Howie, next to the chair in the study. That's where you left your briefcase." And when the children were still with them, Greta, Howard Jr., and John, she would putter about the house, finding their shoes, their socks, their sweaters, their books, and then seeing that all three ate a hearty breakfast. Ellen did this, even though Howard might have awakened the night before to find her standing at the window, head tilted, her eyes fixed on the garden. Or perhaps she was staring at a darkened tree, the house next door, some clouds. Who knew? Ellen was a night owl with energy to burn the next day, and Howard had grown to accept this. So how could he know? How could Howard Woods imagine that a year and 6 days into his retirement, Ellen would finally tell him what she'd been staring at those moonlit nights, or nights of snowflakes trembling their way over Patterson Street, nights of terrified rainfall, the gutters and downspouts full to bursting. But that's what happened. Howard opened his eyes to see his wife in her usual stance at the window. Then he had fallen back to sleep. It was another dream of the classroom, another lecture he was trying desperately to deliver about how Macbeth, Shakespeare's shortest play, was really a study in fear. He was telling this to a dream class of college students who were not only unwilling to listen, they were incapable of hearing him, for in the dream, none of them had ears. It was a dream of retirement, no doubt about it, a dream of emasculation, a dream of finding one's way in the world after almost 30 years of chalk and test papers and classroom talks. And it was a recurring dream, one that he'd started having just days after their retirement party at the Knights of Columbus Hall. But it was a dream he would not dream to the end, at least not on that night, for he felt Ellen's hand on his arm, and this catapulted him, if not wide awake, then into some kind of waiting room to his conscious mind. "What is it?" Howard muttered. He kicked a foot at the top sheet as if struggling to unwrap himself from the madness of the dream. The lecture he'd been trying to deliver had involved the three witches that Macbeth and Banquo encounter on that deserted heath. The witches and their prophecy. Double, double, toil and trouble.
"Howie, wake up."
Howard fought to pry his eyes into a believable wide-awake look, but too much of the dream was still in them. Poor Macbeth, compelled to cross that same barren heath every time someone picked up the play and read it anew, cursed forever by academics and indifferent students to meet up perpetually with those three nasty hags and watch the course of his life spiral downward. Fire burn and cauldron bubble.